Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Oh boy, what a juicy week for sports and the law, which means that you must be listening to the Conduct Detrimental podcast. Tarun Sharma not only appears there, but also runs the Sports and NIL Clinic at the University of Minnesota Law School. He is an attorney and an NIL expert, and I appreciate your time, sir. We are going to be busy here. I want to start with a North Carolina issue, if I could localize it. Right out of the gate, because a UNC tennis player has sued an antitrust lawsuit. Reese Brantmeyer is her name. She sued the NCAA because they won't let her. I don't think but won't let her participate in a tournament, a for-pay tournament, a professional tournament, because it's against the pay-for-play. Meanwhile, the NCAA can't enforce their pay for play NIL rules. They've been forbidden to do that. So square all of this for me if you can.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Adam. Always happy to jump on. I think that all of these cases, and you know, we'll also get into Clemson later, but all of these things kind of reminds me of that saying, like, how do you eat an elephant? And it's one bite at a time. And so there have been all of these efforts, I think, right, for a long time to get the NCAA to come down off of some of these rules that were put in place with the intention of upholding amateurism, whatever that means.
Right.
And what that's meant for a long time is that the labor can't make money off of the out of what they're producing, while everyone else around them, whether it's TV executives or coaches, administrators, the university itself, can.
Right.
And so I think that's starting to change in a big way. And so I find the UNC tennis case particularly interesting because it's not the first time that we've heard of a UNC women's tennis player being affected by something like this. They have a great program over there, obviously, mm-hmm. which, as a Duke guy, you know how difficult that is for me to say. But this is very similar to the Fiona Crawley situation. She was forced to give up something like $81,000 in earnings from the U.S. Open. Similarly, Reese Brantmeyer had to give up something like $50,000 in earnings. And this is not insignificant money, especially as it relates to someone who is 21 years old, right? That would have been really significant money to me at that age. It would still be significant money to me right now. And so these are efforts that these women have made to hone their craft to the point where they are capable of competing with the best professionals in the world and winning matches. And that entitles them to some sort of monetary reward. And it shouldn't be some arbitrary NCAA rule meant to prevent the student athletes from making money that prevents them from enjoying the fruits of their labor. And so that's my take on it. And so I'm excited to see that that both Crawley and now Brantmeyer are speaking up about this, because it is money that they've rightfully earned.
Tarun Sharma is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show, sports attorney, Conduct Detrimental, the podcast. You can see him there, runs the University of Minnesota NIL and Sports Law Clinic. It just brings to mind so many different things. Imagine if the NCAA had anybody who was forward-thinking and they allowed Katie Ledecky to swim professionally and earn money off of her off of who she was through endorsements, and also still swim for Stanford, or Michelle Wee, not only play golf at Stanford, but play in the handful of tournaments that she was playing on the LPGA Tour. Just imagine all of the possibilities and how it would raise the profile of intercollegiate athletics. I'm baffled why they couldn't see it that way.
Hey, it's Adam Golden. I'm in studio with my friend Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. Is it ever too soon to seek out you and your expertise?
Really, there's no too soon. It's time to get serious. So if you're 50 or over, we call it the financial red zone. And that's when really it's time for you to take control of your money and make sure you have a firm on your side that's a fiduciary planning firm, which means they take your side at all times. Now, we'll do this for the next 10 of you who call. This is a $1,000 value, but I'm going to waive my planning fee to make sure you get your total retirement plan and you get on the right path for retirement.
Call 888-843-0013, 888-843-0013, or text Adam to 600-700.
Adam Gold is a paid spokesman. Investment advisory services offered by Capital Financial Advisory Group, a North Carolina registered investment advisor.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen at this point. I think a lot of this is just aiming not to get sued, and that's probably pretty good legal advice. If I was on the NCAA side, I think that would be similar. Because, look, I think that they thought that they were invincible, right? They win they lose the case in 1984, but they get that little piece of dicta in the Board of Regents case. And from then on, it's like, oh, the NCAA basically has free rein to take whatever action that they need to take in order to preserve amateurism, which is a critical trait of intercollegiate athletics. And because of that one small line from Justice Stevens, that we end up with the NCAA really, you give them an inch and they took a mile to enforce amateurism. And so there are some programs that they've allowed that are good, right? Like, so one thing is this Operation Gold program, where the entities that govern a certain sport, so for instance, like USA Wrestling could pay Gable Stevenson's training costs to a certain extent without running afoul of NCAA rules. And so that stuff is great, but it's always a half measure. They don't want to give up power. And so even if they were forward thinking at this point, which they're not, right?
Right,
but,
no.
But even if they were, I think that there's too much fear that they would get sued for whatever they do and they would lose, and that would cause those legal bills to run up more. So I think they're stuck in this point of inaction, which is why they keep going to Congress and begging for some sort of national rule, because that's the only thing that's going to keep them relevant moving into this next era, because we're almost certain to get some sort of ruling. And the one that I think most of us have our eyes on are either this NLRB ruling with USC or the House case. And so both of those things have the real potential to completely bring the NCAA to its knees. Right now, it's been taking body blows for the last, almost a decade now. But we're, I think, really on the precipice of a complete shift in how the model works. And so for anyone that's listening that is frustrated with the current state of intercollegiate athletics, I hear that. I grew up, rooting for teams where guys came to school and they stuck out adversity and they stayed for 4 years and they, because they didn't have necessarily other options. There were a few transfers here and there. I remember Dante Jones, but
yeah, going from Rutgers to Duke.
Yeah, exactly. But other than the rare guy, there were very few of those. And so I think that there is something to be said if you're being compensated fairly, if you're signing an employment contract,
right,
if your rights are being collectively bargained, that you can agree to give up some of those. But in absence of that, I don't see how the NCAA can arbitrarily just set rules and say, yeah, you've got to follow these. And that's what they're finding out right now, too. And it's taken some judges that actually understand the law that don't want to give them a free antitrust pass just because they are this entity. And so I think that this in-between era isn't great. And I also long for old times. Maybe a lot because of nostalgia, but I think that we're going to get to a place that is more recognizable to the OG NCAA fan. I really think that that is in the cards, and we'll see it just with labor being compensated for the value that they're creating.
Yeah, and honestly, that's the way this all should have been. I've used this example before. Tarun Sharma, I want to get to the Clemson ACC situation here in whatever time we have left. But I've used this example. The ACC 25 years ago doled out more money per school in media rights revenue than any other conference. In 1999, they distributed $9 million to each school. That was the number. The Big Ten and the SEC will go north of $100 million within the next 3 years. And the value of 1999, $9 million, is about $17 million today. So we are talking about a five, maybe six-fold increase in the value of media and college sports today. How is it possible that they can't find money to compensate athletes fairly or just collectively bargained? Because just because you collectively bargain an arrangement doesn't necessarily mean there has to be a lot of money involved. You can collectively bargain anything.
Yeah, you can. The Major League Baseball Players Association makes bad deals all the time, so it's definitely possible for a collectively bargaining to be in the favor of ownership, and often it is, but. Yeah, I think that they didn't want to, right? They saw all this money. They realized that, hey, we've got free labor.
It's ours. It's our money. It's not the kids.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that they've missed out here. But I did not know that about $9 million being the most.
Yeah.
So 25 years ago?
1999, the SEC was second at $8 million. The ACC was first at $9 million per school.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the ACC was pretty early to expand, right? They added Boston College and Miami and
Virginia Tech
at that time, and that seemed pretty forward-thinking, but I think that they locked themselves into a bad contract, and that's why they have the issues that they have right now.
All right, let's get to the Clemson thing in the couple of minutes we have left with Tarun Sharma. So Clemson suing the ACC. I mean, they can dress it up, but, I mean, I'm not wrong in thinking that they're simply trying to force the ACC to come to the bargaining table so they can agree on a number that would be amenable to both sides to allow Clemson to exit, right?
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So I think that, and we've talked about this before, but the issue with settling, even with Florida State, is don't you open the floodgates then?
Yeah,
and
it's a bad deal for the ACC.
Yeah, that meets that number, which is not going to be enough in terms of what the value is of keeping a brand like Florida State or keeping Clemson, or more importantly, keeping North Carolina or some of the other bigger schools. And so, if you say, "Yeah, our grant of rights, you guys are right," it doesn't actually mean that we continue to own the media rights for your home games after you leave the conference through 2036 or whatever it is. Then you might as well just, that's the death knell for the conference. Everyone will leave. And so, or the people that can't will stay,
right.
And in which case you don't have a power conference anyway, probably. So I think that is a legitimate concern. We're going to get a hearing this week. It's tomorrow, I believe, in North Carolina. As you recall, or anyone listening, when Florida State filed suit, the ACC preemptively filed suit against them for breach of contract in North Carolina. Obviously, the ACC is based in Charlotte. And so we're going to get a hearing in North Carolina on Friday. And so it'll be interesting to see what the judges there have to say. You would think that the ACC had scouted out which court they were going to file in and were going to get a good result. So I think that this is going to continue to escalate because I think Florida State, there's probably a number that they would be willing to pay because I think there's a value that they're looking at. Look, this is $40 to $50 million every year,
yeah,
which really puts the $9 million and $17 million modern number into perspective, right? That's multiple years of operating budget. Mm-hmm. And so if you fall behind $40 to $50 million behind Ohio State or Michigan or whoever, that is it's perilous for your football program's future, especially if we get into some sort of employment scheme where there isn't one consistent sort of cap on how much you can spend. And so I think that there's a number that Florida State is willing to look at, but the ACC can't do that, in my opinion. Because if you let one out, you're going to lose all of the premier names. And so we'll see how that shakes out. But again, it's like bit by bit, right? These are all body blows. How much can the ACC really take? What is the value of the West Coast schools and SMU that they added? Obviously, that didn't make Clemson and Florida State and North Carolina happy.
No.
And so is that going to be enough to give them a good TV contract next time around? Because this current one, they locked in with ESPN. It hasn't been fruitful for them. Despite the fact that they're featured on ESPN a bunch, the SEC is obviously talked about more, and even mm-hmm. the Big Ten is talked about more on ESPN. So it's not – they're just in a bad spot, which, obviously concerning for me because I hope that Duke's athletic programs will continue to be great well into the 21st century. But, it's definitely something that we're going to have to continue to track. I am hopeful that they'll be able to figure out something that keeps this group together. I grew up with the ACC, and I would like to see it continue to succeed.
Tarun Sharma, Conduct Detrimental, the podcast, at TK Sharma Law on Twitter, University of Minnesota NIL, and Sports Law Clinic. I thank you very much. We'll talk again. We got much more to talk about. Dartmouth versus Dartmouth, more on Clemson and Florida State versus the ACC, but you and I agree. If the ACC settles the Florida State case, then basically it's over unless Florida State is willing to pay like $600 million to leave, in which case that's somewhat prohibitive for most non-Saudi schools. All right, Tarun, I'm sorry I did that. Appreciate your time, man. I'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you, Adam.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.